All right, we are here. We are Galexis. Welcome. Welcome to crafting great relationships. To craft a great relationship requires a great awareness, a great consciousness. So we could have named it Crafting Conscious Relationships. But that also implies that both members of the relationship are dedicated to their consciousness. That may be true, sometimes it is not. But the point is that for you, you want to create, experience, enjoy, and sustain an ever-expanding joyous momentum. Relationships that are fulfilling, satisfying, and enriching. As a human being, you want these relationships. You desire these relationships. It is part of your nature. One of your greatest needs, indeed the whole hierarchy of needs, is oriented around your relationships with people. The first relationship, the one with your mother, is one that gives you the first imprint of safety, of security. Without that foundation, many people go through their childhood feeling unsafe. They shut themselves down, tiptoe around on eggshells or shards of glass, hoping not to stir up a hornet's nest of their parents, hoping not to be rejected, hurt, abandoned. Now, of course, it is our wish that everyone has a wonderfully happy childhood. But that is not the case. When you come into physical manifestation, as we mentioned before, you come in to explore certain themes. And these themes you arrange with your parents and those people who live in your environment to assist you in exploring and learning about those particular themes. For example, someone may have a theme of learning about independence or freedom, a theme finding about value, love, themes around creativity, empowerment. Underlying all your themes, all the specific themes that you really like to explore in this lifetime, is knowing yourself. As we say, the three channels of divine expression, one of those to know yourself. The ancients, man, know thyself. And as you know yourself, you know the divine, because that is who you are. But when you're a child, you're helpless, you're at the mercy of your environment. So your relationships tend to be dependent, of course. It's very natural to be dependent. You can't just drive a car, go to work, make money, do investments at age 2. Your job at age 2 is to learn how to coordinate your body, how to learn more, how to grapple with this 3D reality that you found yourself in, and to come to terms with and come to face with, not to resolve exactly, but to really encounter your themes. These themes, as we mentioned before, turn into your issues, your major life issues. And you often choose one life issue as your predominant issue. Most often, your life issue, your most predominant life issue, underneath it all, deals with who you are and your relationships with people. We call that the commission of challenge. It's what you've chosen as a place that's going to initiate as much personal and spiritual growth as possible. For example, a person who has difficulty with relationships, difficulty holding on to relationships, difficulty fitting in with groups and being able to coordinate well with other people. The themes may have to do with self-acceptance, and it may have to do with how to give and receive. But the issue becomes relationships, because it's only in the suffering, the challenges, the difficulties of relationships that a person choosing that as their commission or challenge really has the impetus, the motivation to grow. Now you'd think that you would proactively choose to grow. But if you just consider the way you're raised, consider all the things that happened to you as a child and all the experiences of adolescence and all the getting accustomed to the world as a young adult. All those many layers and all the complex layers of that. Your motivation was suppressed, denied, shifted, rechanneled into what was acceptable, what was approved of. That, or you rebelled against it. Same thing. And so your true motivation to learn to grow, to be, was put on the back shelf. Your true motivation to express your divine nature through your own unique ways got put aside in favor of things that must be done out of fear of rejection and loneliness. A person with relationship issues, with their commission of challenge being in relationships, they will try to be the person that someone else could love and value, accept, work with. And in so doing, lose that connection with the essence, the uniqueness of the self. You know, if you really know someone well, really, really well, you start to see their eccentricities, don't you? You start to see the little weird things that are unique to them, the little odd stuff of their sense of order. It's got to be just like this and happen at this time of the day. Their routines, their ways of thinking, quirky to you. The best you can do is chuckle over it. Because if you don't like it and you are offended by it, you have some really lot of issue. But the closer you get to somebody, the more of their oddities. These are expressions of aspects of their uniqueness, of their essence, that filtered through all the many layers of learning and trainings and so forth, have managed to just show up at the surface just a bit. And if you think someone else is eccentric, look at yourself. in your own quiet internal space. What strange things you can think. What judgments you can make about the world that others don't seem to be able to make or don't seem to agree with. And if you spend a lot of time alone, you think that what you're doing is perfectly normal. But if someone else were to come and look at you in your quiet times, in your solitudes, your doings can be totally baffling and odd. We're not saying this for you to feel at all embarrassed. Many of you are embarrassed and you don't want anyone else to see that kind of stuff, you know. Because you wouldn't want anyone to laugh at you. That would hurt. That would be difficult. But you cannot fully repress yourself and be that ideal person that you think everybody wants you to be. You learn it the hard way. Of course, you know this now. But when you were a child, when you're adolescent, you didn't know that. And so, because of that, because of your need for safety, your need for love and value, your need to belong, your needs, at some point in your youth, you made a decision. You decided that you were going to put the discovery of your truth, your essence, your uniqueness, put your uniqueness, potentially very embarrassing and rejecting for you, very making you very vulnerable to other people. You're going to put that on that shelf, on a back shelf somewhere. Along with that went your motivation. And you adopted the motivations you were encouraged to adopt. All right, the motivations are given you through training. This training begins from when you're born. It can even start while you're still in the womb. This training is done through a collective thought form, construct, grid. We attempted to call it the matrix because it is one, but we don't essentially want it to be completely confused with the movie of the same name. But this grid is an integrator, a social integrator. What it does is that it is a thought form that initially put together when a whole bunch of people agree on something. For example, one of the greatest social integrators is religion, for example. And whatever specific sect or denomination or whatever of religion that you grow up in, you have a social integrator for that religion. That everybody who believes that agrees upon as a certain principles and priorities that you must accept, certain rules that you must adhere to, certain behaviors that are acceptable and not acceptable. And so what it does is, as you learn it, it puts you in the box. In the box with everybody else. The initial idea is that you belong. And that you get feedback that you know what you're supposed to be doing there. Initially, it seems like a good idea. And when you're a child, you just drink it up and try to figure it out. Now, you may not be happy with it. A lot of you are very spunky. Very independent. Part of what you needed to have in order to break free of various traditions and get on your spiritual path in the first place. But you knew when you were a child. You could feel it. You could know what was true for you and what was not. And so many of you were a bit rebellious. We're a bit rebellious to the social integrators. Now, the society you're living in has many social integrators. As a composite, as put them all together, you've got essentially the mainstream consciousness or consensus thinking. But what these thought structures do is that they plug into your subconscious mind, even into your unconscious mind, and you resonate with them. And if you resist, if you rebel, it creates a big deal. It creates an extra amount of energy. Think about it. If you're going to be part of a group and you continuously are dissatisfied with the group, they're going to be dissatisfied with you. You know, there's conflict. There's negative energy all rolling around. So the social integrator of that group will somehow or another try to flatten you. You put out a burst, a flare of individuality, of anger, of passion. It'll come on and if not just give you a flick on the nose, it'll flatten you out. And what it also does, as it does that, is it takes your energy. In order to function within the various social integrators systems that you do work in, because you choose this one over that one and you belong to that group rather than that group, you agree to give your energy to the system. If you're enthusiastic about it, and if you take a leadership position in your social integrator, in your group, in your network, and you have followers, you get energy from the followers. And the energy given to you from your followers, which is comes on the form of attention, you give a lot of that, you pay a dues, so to speak, to the social integrator construct and strengthens it. If you rebel, there's a lot of attention on you, but it's negative attention. When it's negative attention, the social integrator takes bigger dues. It can create pain, suffering, rejection, isolation, loneliness, separation. It is so painful indeed to have that experience. And every one of you has felt it. If you haven't felt, if you didn't feel it in high school, you certainly have felt it since. Feeling that you don't belong, that you don't fit in, that somehow or another people don't like you, or you're just not with the right people, or that they don't accept the way you are. You're at odds with your social integrator. And you need to find one that suits you. Social integrators, we're going to give examples of those. Look at the institutions in your culture. For example, we talked about religion. That's a really big one. Any kind of philosophy. Any kind of philosophy about, for example, diet. Right now, there's a really huge building of a social integrator network. Tremendous energy building for veganism. Social integrators build. And generally, when you belong to a social integrator, or let's say you decide to be a vegan, and you're passionate about it, this is the way, you fit into that particular social integrator. Right? So that diet is your way. And in that social integrator, there's a certain core of fundamentalism. There are fundamental veganists or fundamentalist vegans, right? They're going to go and preach veganism as the only way there is for everybody. Which really turns a whole bunch of other people off, even including some other vegans. But you have to make such a commitment sometimes to go there. You have to deny yourself all sorts of goodies that you used to eat. That you want to make sure that your choice is correct. You want to have that choice validated by others. So you join that social integrator network, that grid. Religions is the same way. There's a fundamentalist core. This is the only way. Those who say this is the only way get energy from the system. Those who are not fully there lose energy to the system. In fact, social integrators, they're not conscious. But they do have an intention. And their intention is to have adherence, to grow, to expand, and to get your energy is the way they do it. Government. If you've ever known anybody who works, you know, in some kind of government office, kind of in the middle ranks, there's a whole culture, a whole way of thinking that's foreign to people who don't work for the government. It's that social integrator. To them, it's obvious this is the way it should be. Other people, huh? Medicine, standard medicine. The channel and Daniel have several friends who have encountered standard medical practice as it relates to cancer. There's a whole cancer social integrator with the chemo and the radiation and surgery options. And there's a whole core of fundamentalism. This is the only way. This is the only way. And that egregor, it's an egregor, it's a social integrator, that social integrator of medicine, standard medicine, claims its adherence and attracts its adherence, and it expands financial resources. Because, and if you notice, that the most successful social integrators, like religions, like medicine, science, all the different branches of science, same thing. They attract adherents, people who believe that this is the way, that this is the truth, or try to believe that, or whatever. And they attract a tremendous amount of money, which attracts a lot of people thinking, oh, this must be true. This must be important. This must be right, because look how much money they've got. This must be the way. Let me go and belong there and get some of that money myself. However, social integrators do not distribute money easily. It's generally disappointing when people get into social and get into some kind of network there, they find that unless you're its favorite, unless you're in that top 1%. The social integrator doesn't give you that much energy. It's when you're at that top, when you're the leader, when you're the shining star, and everybody is like looking up to, that's where you get energy. You get energy from your reality, from everywhere. And sometimes this energy puts people over the edge with power and ego. Good example is Bernie Madoff. He was in the money system, social integrator. We kind of would call it like maybe the Wall Street social integrator. But it's a money system. He went and he got to the top, and he got there actually legitimately. And once he was there, then he became scurrilous. Then he began to put on scams because he could. Everybody was giving him energy and believing in him, and he was leading people down the primrose path to loss. Social integrators are tricky. So what we want to work with now, with you, is a social integrator around relationships. You are trained from the get-go to have the traditional relationship. It is given you by movies and TV, by other people, by your family, by everybody. That this is the ultimate way. And the ultimate way, as far as love relationships are concerned, is a man and a woman getting married, living happily ever after. Having children, making lots of money, having a great lifestyle, living in a beautiful house, having so many cars in the garage, all that form. Having the marriage, the man or the woman, having the cars, having the stuff, having the talented and brilliant children that make you so proud. All of that stuff is built into your social integrator system. And as we mentioned previously, you're trained to aim for that when you're a child. Even if it has no bearing on who you are, you're trained to go there. Even though this is an ideal that's only been around for, you know, a few hundred years, but it's kind of a fantasy ideal of what happiness in a relationship or happiness looks like. So you're given this whole programming that you must look like this, do this, and do it this way in order to be happy. Now, we admit that there's some people who do that, and they are happy. And they are very successful. And everybody looks to them with envy, jealousy, longing. Oh, gosh, I wish I could be there. Exactly what the social integrator wants you to feel. Because if you feel that way, you'll work hard towards that ideal. You'll try really hard to be fundamentalist relationship. You'll try to make that real. You'll validate it for the few for whom it's right and true. But it may not work for you. And there you are, chasing an illusion, chasing a dream that has really no substance for you. Spending years either running for it, rebelling against it, pushing it away, yearning for it, pining for it, longing for it, or whatever. Your relationship with that idea, that ideal, puts you in a position. It positions you in your social network. It positions you in your culture. And because it doesn't work for you, you've had relationships that didn't work. You would go into it aiming for your version of this ideal. We would say your version is not all that creatively different from it, but your version of it, nevertheless, just a slight coloration that's unique for you. And you find that whoever you're playing a relationship game with, whoever you're engaging with and trying to have a relationship, who you assume is also aiming for that, and they also are too, their version of it. Find that in the conflicts that the two of you have, it brings the awakening to both of you. It doesn't work. But you don't think about, oh, it's the ideal, it's the fantasy is not working. You think you did something wrong. That this was not the right person for you. If you just found the right person, it would be all right. So there's the search for the right person. Mr. Right, Miss Right. The perfect fit. Well, if you've got issues, and you definitely have had issues, then you're going to find a play partner who has the perfect fit to your issues. You know, like puzzle pieces that fit together. So your issue and their issue, they're your buttons, their buttons. You push their buttons, they push your buttons. And what is the intention of that? Recognize your reality loves you. It's created to give you love. But in this case, what it's giving you, and as a form of love, is giving you education. It's telling you, look, these are your issues. And the point of these issues is for you to realize that what you're aiming for isn't working for you. And whatever strategies you're trying to use to force this relationship into this ideal picture will not work for you. It has nothing to do with the other person. The other person is attracted to you. Out of the illusion, out of empty space, comes this other person for you to experience your relationship issues with. So you can find your themes. The themes you came in to experience in this lifetime, the bottom line being knowing yourself. You want to know, what is it you really want? It's easy to ask people, what do you really want? And they'll tell you form things like money, success. They'll tick off all the things in the ideal vision that they were given. The great lifestyle, the great person, all that. So what do you want? Oh yeah, this, and this. Yeah, maybe you want all those forms. But inside those forms, what is it that you're really looking for? What is it you really want? Well, love, right. And in that love, what do you really want? What is it you really are after? Every love relationship, every attempt to have a love relationship, every relationship, friendship, business partnership, teacher, student, practitioner, client, every relationship is seeking love, indeed, in some form. The form is what gets you into trouble. Because a social integrator teaches you which forms to go for. What social integrator has ever told you to find your way, your own way, your uniqueness. None, they're not going to. Because if they did that, you would no longer be an adherent. You would no longer be giving energy to this, the whole construct, to the matrix, to the grid. And they don't want to lose you. They want to threaten you with ejection, rejection, isolation, loneliness, separation. And as soon as you get threatened with that, and you feel the terror, and you feel the rage, you come running back, scurrying back. Oh, please, please, let me try harder. I'll try to do it better. At the bottom of the relationship, social integrator, is what we call the man code and the woman code. These are the trainings given you according to your gender so that you'll grow up and have that perfect fantasy fulfilled. Now, the positive intentions of your parents, they want you to grow up and be successful, unless they have some really terrible personal agendas. In that case, they don't want you to be more successful than they are. They want someone to commiserate with. But most parents want their children to grow up to be more successful. And the idea is that initially, good parents want their children to develop their unique gifts and be unique. But, and this is a big but, they want the child to fit in, to be accepted, to be happy in the matrix, to be happy in the social integrators. And the only way the parents know to get the child happy in the social integrators is to teach them all the rules of the game. How to be. What face you need to put forward, how you need to communicate. You know, when you're a child, you're taught please and thank you. This is the beginning of your relationship training. It's good training. But it can be taken too far when you get it plugged in with the man code and the woman code. The man code is that you're going to grow up to be a highly successful, i.e. read, makes lots of money, man. And you're going to show that wealth. You're going to bestow it upon your family. Your wife, your beautiful wife, your talented children. And you're going to have the mansion on the hill. And you're going to be a top dog. You're going to be at the top of the hierarchy, at the top of the ladder. You're going to be ruler of the world. What 11-year-old boy has not had some fantasy about being the ruler of the world? Look at all the movies that come out. The world is in danger of imminent destruction, and only one man can save the world. In comes the hero. We're just kind of doing the Lambo thing. Right? But it's some version of that. Going to come in and do mayhem and violence, kill a whole bunch of people, destroy the meteor, whatever it is. Because he's smarter than everybody else. He has confidence when everybody else is losing theirs. He somehow has magic working for him. He's the top dog. And if he can't be ruler of the universe, if he can't be the savior of the planet, then at least be a CEO of a big corporation. Make tremendous amounts of money. Tremendous. So he has several jets and he flies all over the place, has homes in every locale and blah, blah, blah. So on and so on. Now, do you think this is fair to put this picture on little boys? No. But that's the picture they get. And it's so insidious that by the time most boys reach puberty, they've had many fantasies of being soldiers. They've had toy guns. They've done something to do, to be the destructive force, to be the macho. Now, the man code evolved from several hundred years ago. We'd say that it probably started with all the warrior societies. And there are various warrior societies around the planet, and they're all very, very similar. It's all very regimented, very strong rules, and very strong hierarchies. Look at the army. There's a hierarchy. You've got a title at every level, and you have to obey, without question, your superior. And if you fulfill that, okay, you get to move up in rank, and then you get to boss people who were like you. This works the same way in a political party. You get to, you're kind of a local council member, and then you go to the state representative, and then maybe you run for senator and or governor, and hopefully one day you make that president of the United States. Leader of the free world, yes. That's the hope of every boy. Not really, but that's what they feed males. It doesn't matter in what country. Sometimes it's worse in some countries. You're expected to be way more macho, to treat others with tremendous disrespect and arrogance as a way of putting others down to raise you higher in the hierarchy. But there's a basic code given to men. You're supposed to have all these forms. You're supposed to fulfill all these requirements and all these conditions and be all this amount of success. But in order to do it, you have to fake everybody out. You can't let them see who you really are. You have to hide any vulnerabilities, any weaknesses. You cannot let any weaknesses show, because this is a battle to the top, a competition. And if some other guy sees your weakness, you're toast. They're going to attack you. Sometimes you can even see it if, well, you know, if you're a female, you don't often get to be privy to it, but a bunch of guys getting together, hanging out together, perhaps in the, you know, in the frat house. What do they talk about? Have you ever noticed, if you can just kind of be a fly on the wall, that they're working the man code? They're trying to get to top dog position amongst whatever other men are present. It is part of the code. If you were with one other man, you've got to be one up. You can't be allowed to be the one down. That's the loser position. Too bad for you. You're not going to be a success. It's really heavy. So men brag. They make up stories and they brag about their sexual conquests, about how much money they make, what important people they know, whatever it is. They just keep bragging, and then they will criticize each other, and they will make jokes to ridicule each other. And who ends up at the top of this is the obvious top dog or the leader. Now, when you see a street gang, well, maybe you don't see a street gang because that's not in your neighborhood, but a street gang is comprised of generally a very strong leader and a whole bunch of followers who want to belong. What makes a leader truly a leader? What makes that 1%? What makes a top dog? They don't teach you this one. The top dog is the man, the boy, whoever it is, that lives according to their truth more than the others and is willing to be there. Now, admittedly, not everybody's going to find their truth leading a gang in a slum. But those who are correctly placed become the leaders. They can be terribly mean, violent, cruel. But they have something that the followers do not. They have a sense of themselves. They know more who they are than their followers. So they become the social integrator's favorite. They become the leader. The energy is given to them. They get more energy. Then they do with it whatever suits them, but the energy comes to them from the followers to them. Another social integrator is like rock and roll. You've got the rock and roll star on the stage. All the adoring eyes of the fans. And here's this star strutting about on the stage and singing. Light show going. It's a big deal, big display. People pay a lot of money to come and give their energy to the performer. That's why performing is so high. It's so exciting. People love to be the performer. The people who get there to that level are people who are truer to who they are. They're more aware of themselves. Not that they're doing it on a conscious spiritual path, perhaps, like you are. But they have found that the societal structure works for them and they can be themselves. And they are eccentric people, if you've noticed. All these celebrities that do all sorts of weird, crazy stuff. And people follow it to the nth degree. Their magazines devoted to pictures taken by paparazzi, comments, lots of judgments about their lifestyle and all their personal tastes that could be possibly revealed. And what makes a celebrity really successful in a longer term is because they listen to themselves. But do you ever learn that? No. You're told by the social integrator, they made it to success. Here's how they did it. You need to follow their map, their path, and do it too. Even if it's not yours, that's the path to success. So the man code is about taking your path to success, but being impervious to weakness. Weakness being seen as emotion. If you're too emotional, oh boy, you're too vulnerable. They're going to whammy you. If you're too sensitive, if you're too creative, if you're gay, whatever it is. Ooh, you're going to be attacked. You're going to be brought down. So men discover when they get into their relationships that they have no clue how to be intimate emotionally in a relationship. They spent all their lives, their childhood, adolescence, young adulthood, learning how to protect and defend themselves, to hide their motives, to hide their vulnerabilities, to hide any weaknesses, hide their emotions, hide themselves, so nobody can find a place to attack. And all of a sudden, here they have a relationship and They've got to learn how to maneuver with emotions. They've got to learn how to handle it. Because guess what? Relationships bring up emotions. Big time. If you haven't noticed. Why? Because emotions tell you who you are. How you're responding, how you're feeling. It tells you who you are. Now women, your woman code is derivative to the man code. Because the man code developed from the warrior societies, a male-dominated system, a male chauvinistic system for sure, that the woman is seen as the helper. There's this term, help meet. A help meet means that she dedicates her life to serving her man and her children. How noble. And in order to get to that position in the ideal, whereas if she serves her man and the children, she'll bring up these wonderful children that make her proud and people will see what a good person she is. How smart and capable as a mother she has been. And she will get all the riches and wealth of her fabulously wealthy husband and have a fabulous lifestyle playing in the sun, enjoying having her nails done at the spa with her girlfriends, etc., etc. This whole idea given to you as a package, it doesn't fit hardly anyone, but it's given to you, right? So you're trained, and the women are trained by the woman code, and we call it the good girl training. It starts out, you're going to be mommy's little helper. You're a good girl. That means you defer to authority, you're compliant. You do what you're told. You don't rebel. You're supportive and helpful at all times. And you're nice. No, never get angry or peevish or petty or mean. No. You're not allowed to do that because that's being a bitch. Just like guys can't go off and get into aesthetics too much. They're a wimp. They can't get into emotions. Oh, he's wimpy. He wimped out. He feels too much. His corollary is the bitch who's angry. Now, what this tends to do, it tends to make females feel responsible for anything that goes wrong. They feel guilty for everything. And if you don't feel guilty, women, in a relationship, if the man won't tell you how he feels or he gets angry, then you go into anger yourself and you become the bitch and you fight. But that's not satisfying either. For a guy, being a wimp is not satisfying because then he feels like some kind of loser and his ego is just devastated. For a woman to be a bitch, she thinks, I have to be a mother in this relationship. I have to take care of everything and do everything, and I'm responsible for everything. So the most common distortions of the ultimate fantasy, ideal relationship, comes because the man code and the woman code come into conflict with each other. And the woman just cannot fit into this little mold of being the help meet, always smiling. And the man just cannot fit into this little tiny box of being Mr. Moneybags, ruler of the world, right? Total confident, macho man. Nobody gets there. Nobody makes it there. Okay, maybe a few seem to be close, envied, admired, the objects of many pinings and longings and so forth. But if you've noticed, a lot of what the celebrity magazines are about is how the celebrities experience their downfall, their drug addictions, their violence, their pain and suffering. That's just as juicy, if not more so, than their happiness. In your relationships, you're continuously having to cope with the tremendous pressure of the social integrator for you to be a certain person and for your mate to be a certain person. Tremendous pressure. Regardless of how conscious you are, how aware you are still living in society. And women, you're still stuck with being good girls or bitches. Either one. The Madonna or the whore. Where's your uniqueness there? None. Man, you're going to be either, you know, it's okay, man, for to be an artist, to be creative, provided he makes a lot of money with it. If he doesn't make much money, he's just a starving artist. Nobody pays him any attention. But as soon as enough people like what he does, and attention turns to him, he who has been unique, honest to himself, and we're even going to include women in this too, a woman who is honest and clear with herself, in her creativity, in her unique expression, as soon as enough people like what she does or he does, and the attention turns to them, they begin to get energy from the social integrator. It's called success in the social integrator term. They get money, they get support, they get approval, people want to be them, pattern after them, but you see it's generally a unique pattern. These are people who are willing to be who they are more than others. They didn't go out and try to snow everybody, please everybody. In a personal relationship, every time your button gets pushed, if you're not careful, you'll take it personally and get angry. This is the way the social integrator has set it up. It wants you to be angry or to be frightened into kowtowing. Because anytime you're angry, it makes something a big deal. Anytime you're frightened, it makes it a big deal. Anytime there's extra energy, excess energy going on in a relationship, the social integrator says, oh, yum. Let's get this to a really full-fledged fight and we can get a lot of energy out of this. The social integrator, and this is what makes it really tricky on a personal level, is aligned with your ego. It's like your negative ego, your positive ego too, but your negative ego is your link, is the channel of your social integrator. And so when you get into a relationship and you feel attacked and you take it personally, and you get defensive, and you start judging, or you're running away, or getting hostile, or controlling, and starting playing games to try to force the other person to get small so that you can stay big, to put them into a one down, or to put them at a position to where it's manageable for you and you don't feel an overwhelm. Whenever that happens, you're out of balance. It's obvious. Whenever you have excess anger, excess guilt, excess judgment, excess fear, excess rage, excess emotional stuff. It's as if the social integrator is like a monitor, or the ego is a monitor, and it's like looking all over there and looking at everybody and just, you know, monitoring and making sure everything's going smoothly. And then suddenly there's a big flare of energy over there. Oh, energy! Let me go get it. Let me get it into a full-fledged argument. Oh, great! Those of you who've worked with your negative ego, you know that the negative ego feeds on your anger. It makes your negative ego bigger, more powerful, more influential. And it really messes up your relationships. But it is because of the social integrator trainings. Because when your buttons get pushed and you get defensive, it's you go right back to the man code or the woman code. I should be like this. And I don't want anybody to see me being weak, vulnerable, stupid, not so smart, whatever. I don't want anybody to see me that. Now, women have this too. They want to appear smart, intelligent, capable. Nobody wants to look incompetent. That's shameful. That's going to get you ridicule, humiliation, embarrassment, rejection. Don't go there. That's the dark side. But that's exactly what the ego feeds on. And that energy goes to the social integrator and makes it stronger. And you feel less capable of fulfilling that dream. The dream that was fed you. Now, the reason we're spending so much time on the social integrator is because every time you're in a relationship with somebody, let's just look at a love relationship, for example, because it shows more details than any other of who you are and what's going on. In a love relationship, you've got parts of you that are at odds with other parts. And you've got the social integrator on your case, wanting you to be this person that you're not. So there's always a kind of pressure on you to be aware that really you should be in alignment and on this other path or other track than you are. And so you're looking for the signs that this relationship's going to work out. And by looking for those signs, you're looking for, well, is this taking me to that fantasy or not? Is this taking me to that ideal? So you're looking for the person to give you feedback that you're going to the ideal. They can't go to the ideal. You can't go to the ideal. It's not your ideal. It's a social integrator's ideal. So they're putting pressure on both of you. When your button gets pushed, you take it personally. You take it personally because you think, darn, I didn't cover up my emotion there enough. I didn't cover up my weakness enough. They're accusing me of not being smart or good or kind or loving or intelligent or capable or powerful or blah, 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 blah. And rather than getting the feedback from a loving reality that, whoops, here's a place where I tend to give my power away. Here's where I tend to go and play guilt trips and on the other person and try to control or do whatever my strategy is. Wow, I really need to know that. Instead, you defend the ideal. And you give that energy to your negative ego, which gives it to the social integrator. And you've lost the battle. Plus, when all that excess energy shows up, and here's how you lose the energy. If you've noticed in nature, there are balancing forces. You have hot weather, you have cold weather. You know, winter, you know, summer and winter. And you've got these balances. You've got day and night. This is living in the duality. That's the way it's constructed. You've got male and female. You've got hot and cold. You've got all sorts of opposites. You've got polarities. And you're somewhere always in that polarity. You're not on the extreme edges, even though that's where the fundamental function of the social integrator is focused, is being the extreme. That ideal, the ideal man and woman having the ideal relationship and the ideal lifestyle is an extreme. Nobody gets there. Okay? It's an ideal. People seek to go there but never reach it because that an ideal is never reached anyway. But as you're going there, all the turbulence, all the conflict sends up flares. So here's your ego, social integrator looking at, okay, monitoring, are all the kids in bed asleep? Is everybody is everything going well? You know, et cetera. And here's a flare. Yum, there's some good energy. Sends in the balancing forces to take it from the extremes, to calm it down. Let's make a simple analogy. There's a bunch of children playing. And there's a really, really cool toy. One cool toy. One kid gets it. The other kid is jealous and grabs it away from the first kid, who starts to cry, "Mommy, it took my toy!" Another kid's wanting to see the toy, wanting to be with the toy, or be at least with the kid who has the toy, so maybe they get a turn to hold the toy. And then there's kids on the side that are thinking, "I don't think I'll ever be able to get to the toy. I'll never have the toy. They don't like me. They're not going to let me hold the toy." And there's other kids that are like, "Well, how am I going to be able to get the toy away from that kid? If I go around this way, maybe if I distract him, I'll grab it. Maybe I'll fight him for it. That's what it'll be." So you have all these different attitudes about the toy. And they're all yelling, crying, slapping, fighting, hollering. Okay, so the parents come out, or whoever, the head of the playground, the teacher, whoever, comes out, and they're all fighting over this toy. And there's all this display of tremendous emotion and stress and conflict going on. What do you think that the teacher's going to do? She could say, "Give me that toy." "Yes, ma'am." She takes the toy. "Now, you kids, calm down. Settle down. You don't deserve this toy. You just settle down." And she takes it inside. That's what happens when you make something a big deal. The balancing forces say, "Oh, this is what's causing all the problem. Let's take it away." So if you have a relationship and it's really turbulent, stormy, and you're fighting each other and you're hitting each other's buttons and you're taking it personally, and you're trying really hard to be these ideal people and failing miserably at that, you can only really be on good behavior for a certain period of time and they just can't stand it anymore. And the same is true for your mate. The social integrator is going to come in and take your toy. It's going to take that relationship. Say, "This is not for you. The two of you need to separate. Stop it. No more. Break up. Come on." Now, the reason we go to all the trouble of this is to realize you've got all these different pieces in there and they're at odds with each other because you're not on your true, correct path to self. Your relationship with yourself is missing something. You've been trained to think that you're not good enough, because you can't make that ideal. No matter how hard you try, it's never good enough. Never enough. You keep pushing, keep trying, or you rebel against it and say, screw this, I'm going to just be single the rest of my life. That's it. I'm going to go out and live as a hermit in the woods. Take that, society. Whatever you do about it comes out of your awareness of what you're supposed to be and the awareness of who you are and how that's different. And you need to put your priorities with who you are. You need to prioritize you, because if you prioritize you and you don't go for the template that the social integrator gives you. Now, we know that you already have decided that ideal relationship is not mine. Right, given. But every little step along the way where you have to be smart, have to be approved of, you have to be in charge, you have to be in control, or you have to somehow or another be intelligent enough to know what to say at what time. That you have to know how to have a really perfect relationship when you have no clue. Nobody has given you a clue. And have to deal with all these emotions and nobody's told you how to deal with all the emotions. Look at what you've gone through. And look how much you've learned about yourself. So the key to letting go of the pressure of the social integrator is, number one, to make the choice to follow your own path, which is your own truth, to align with your own truth, and no matter what guilt or fear is put on you, i.e. the inner slave driver, telling you you're not enough, you have to do more, you have to fix yourself, improve yourself, and make yourself perfect, or you have to find the perfect person, or whatever. Letting that, all those conflicts go between your internal child, your internal parent, your internal adolescent, your negative ego, your young adult self, with all the dreams, thinking that, okay, now it's the time I must go for the big dream, getting you on a track of achievement. And its corollary, the slave driver. Let's motivate you by guilt and fear, because you don't have the right to have your own motivation anymore. You've been trained out of your own motivation. This is the motivation you must have in order to get to this image and ideal that's not yours. Right. If you're not really motivated, if it's not your true goal, not your true path, not your true self, you have to force yourself to go there. Force yourself to keep trying. You can stop the social integrator. And here's how. It makes a huge difference in your relationships, by the way. Otherwise, we wouldn't be putting it in the relationship workshop, all right? To get the social integrator out of your life, to keep your negative ego from pulling all your energy out of you and handing it over to the social integrator, you have to consciously choose your own truth over all else. Every decision that you make must be according to your true principles, in alignment with what is true, what is preferred, what is your priorities for you. Different for you than not with other people. You have to make your choices based on loving and valuing yourself. You have to give your love to yourself first. Now, you all know this. But in order to get the social integrator off your back, you must choose to be able to do this with no guilt and no fear of rejection, alienation, or separation from the social integrator. It's where you've been belonging. It's where you've networked. You've got to go your own way. It's scary. It's outside the consensus, outside the box. You have to choose it, and you can't feel the fear of being there, the fear of loneliness. You can't pine for the ideal that you're never going to get. You've got to go find your own way, find your own love, loving yourself. And secondly, you've got to learn how to not react and respond so strongly to the social integrator. Because when somebody pushes your button and you react, that's giving energy to the social integrator. If somebody comes and pushes your button, you go, oh, I still have some guilt there. I still feel inclined to throw my power away here. Thank you for showing that to me. I hereby now choose differently. Social integrator doesn't get any of your energy when you do that. Because you're in your power. You're being aware of yourself. You're being true to yourself. You're conscious. You just don't suddenly go with knee-jerk reaction into defense. Or attacking back or controlling or whatever. You take that information and go, oh, okay. And when you do that, you move from issues to themes. Because the theme is you.